All right, friends, it's HoopBall promo time. This is big because this is our 2020-2021 NBA season product rollout, and I am so excited to tell you about what we've got. We almost never push our HoopBall products, but this is the window of the year where we need to power that engine. So let me tell you what's out. We've got our draft guide, our flagship shining beacon to the most comprehensive draft guide in fantasy. We cover all over 400 players this season with future access pass to our Brewski 150. Now, if you don't know what the Brewski 150 is, I'm here to give you the need-to-know info. This is the fantasy draft list that has beaten every other list for 10 straight years. And new this year for HoopBall, we're unveiling our monthly membership plans featuring our fantasy pass, draft guide, Brewski 150, our new DFS pass, premium in-season tools, as well as our wager pass for sports bettors. Everything you need, we've got you covered. 365 around the clock, HoopBall Tools is your one-stop shop for your NBA treasure trove of fantasy need-to-know information. All that you need and more, check us out. Head to hoop-ball.com or follow at HoopBallFantasy on Twitter now. Check it out, give us a follow, get your tools, and win your league. All right, friends, it's HoopBall promo time. This is big because this is our 2020-2021 NBA season product rollout, and I am so excited to tell you about what we've got. We almost never push our HoopBall products, but this is the window of the year where we need to power that engine. So let me tell you what's out. We've got our draft guide, our flagship shining beacon to the most comprehensive draft guide in fantasy. We cover all over 400 players this season with future access pass to our Brewski 150. Now, if you don't know what the Brewski 150 is, I'm here to give you the need-to-know info. This is the fantasy draft list that has beaten every other list for 10 straight years. And new this year for HoopBall, we're unveiling our monthly membership plans featuring our fantasy pass, draft guide, Brewski 150, our new DFS pass, premium in-season tools, as well as our wager pass for sports bettors. Everything you need, we've got you covered. 365 around the clock, HoopBall Tools is your one-stop shop for your NBA treasure trove of fantasy need-to-know information. All that you need and more, check us out. Head to hoop-ball.com or follow at HoopBallFantasy on Twitter now. Check it out, give us a follow, get your tools, and win your league.
The following is a HoopBall presentation.
All right, what's good? Thank you for tuning in. It is March 4th, 2020. I am your host, Alan Strokey, and this is the Box Score Breakdown, a HoopBall.com and Hawaiian Isles Kona Coffee presentation. Hawaiian Isles Kona Coffee, of course, is the title sponsor of this podcast and all podcasts on the HoopBall.com network. You could look them up on their website, HawaiianIsles.com. You can look them up on Amazon by searching for Hawaiian Isles Coffee. And you can always look them up on Amazon, or sorry, on Twitter, by searching for the handle H-I Kona Coffee. That is H-I-K-O-N-A Coffee. Hawaiian Isles, taste the Kona difference and get yourself a cup today. This is take two of this podcast. My computer hit me with that random unannounced update. I guess maybe not unannounced because I've just been ignoring all of its pleads. That it in form of notifications that it sends me to update, that I always ignore them, and it hit me this time. It really bit me in the ass. Mid recording, hit with the update. Audio file nowhere to be found. Once it's back on, so I'm going to be going over a lot of things I've already talked about here, but hopefully that will help with the speed and pacing of this podcast. I won't gloss over unimportant details, but I will not I'm not going to bog you all down with fluff. So let's get right into it. All right. First game on the night is the Boston Celtics visiting the Cleveland Cavaliers, and this one filled to the brim with injuries on both sides. We'll start with the Boston side of things, who are missing three of their core starting group. Gordon Hayward missed this game with a right knee contusion. His status is sort of up in the air for Boston's next game until we learn more. Kemba Walker is sitting out the second night of a back-to-back with his knee issue, which is, I guess, something we should be expecting moving forward.
And the sort of bigger one is Jaylen Brown, who is missed this game with a right hamstring injury, and he's expected to miss the next week at least. So of the three here, he's the one who might have the prolonged absence. This is also in better news for the Boston Celtics. Jason Tatum was able to come back after missing last night's game with an illness. So he provided a ton of offense, predictably, for the Celtics. He led the team in scoring easily, 32 points on 11 of 24 shooting, contributed with 9 boards, 6 assists, 2 steals, a block, and 5 three-pointers. He's cruising. Doesn't look like he's going to be slowing down at any point as we barrel towards the end of the season here. Bunch of guys moved into the starting lineup. We'll talk about, well, why don't we start with Marcus Smart, who is basically the second in command of this ship with all the injuries. He shot 5 of 15 from the floor, but he also had 8 of 8 from the free throw line, en route to 18 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and 4 turnovers in 32 minutes. Elsewhere here, Grant Williams moved into the starting lineup. He shot 4 of 6 from the field and scored 8 points to go with 5 rebounds, had an assist, a steal, and a block. Brad Wanamaker got the start for Kemba Walker. He shot 2 of 6 from the field for 6 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and a turnover. Daniel Tice actually saw a lot of a sharp reduction to his minutes. He only played 19, scored 5 points to go with 3 rebounds, and had a steal and a block shot. We'll talk more about Tice in a second here. Off the bench, Semi Ojeleye, who went to the locker room but came back. I don't even know what it was. It seems like it was a pretty insignificant injury. But he scored 22 points off the bench with 5 threes, 6 boards, 2 assists, and a block in 30 minutes. Obviously, that's not going to be something that he can replicate once the Boston has more bodies back. Enes Kanter double-doubled off the bench in 14 minutes with 10 points, 11 rebounds, and a steal on 3 of 6 shooting. And Robert Williams played 14 minutes, scored 6 points, 5 rebounds, and had a steal in 3 block shots. So that's a good point to sort of tailor the Celtics conversation here is the return of the Time Lord. Return of the Time Lord. I like that. Robert Williams is back in the lineup, and Brad Stevens doesn't look like he's going to waste any time in sort of reverting back to the 3-man center rotation that we saw before he went down in early December. And that's not good news for Daniel Tice owners, primarily. That's the biggest takeaway here. We've already seen some of the ramifications of this because Tice's minutes were, I think, they're close to 20 or 21 in last night's game, the previous one as well, where I think Robert Williams got himself up to maybe 11 or 12 minutes. I pulled up the numbers from the start of the season to December 6th, which was Robert Williams' last game before missing 3 months with that hip injury. And the minutes distribution that they had then looked very similar to the one that Brad Stevens ran with tonight. 21 minutes per game for Tice, 15, may call it 16 for Enes Kanter, and 14 for Robert Williams. Those were the that was the minutes distribution pre-injury. In that time, Daniel Tice was the only fantasy relevant guy, and just barely so. He was number 138 in 9 category leagues. Enes Kanter was outside the top 200, and Robert Williams was around 160. If Williams is to play 14 minutes a game, the biggest question it will be, is Daniel Tice no longer this mid-round option that he's become over the last, well, really, 3 months? I have the numbers here for Tice. In that span without Williams, he was number 69 in 9 category leagues, and he was playing 25 minutes a game. A reduction in 4 to 5 minutes could be, you know, if he was playing 20 every night, he's not going to be an unuseful fantasy asset, but this is averages we're talking about. There'll be some nights where he'll probably get himself closer to the high 20s, but then there'll be nights like tonight where he doesn't even break 20, and that is going to be very difficult to rely on in head-to-head settings. My advice is to stick it out because he's been that good. He's worth holding on to for a little bit longer. If you're in your playoffs right now, it might be a little tougher to make a commitment like that. But I think that he has shown enough consistency. He's been a consistent mid-round option all year. Daniel Tice, obviously, who I'm talking about here. He deserves perhaps one or two more games. The next game that Boston plays is the 6th, this upcoming Friday, against Utah. Keep a very close eye on Boston's centered minutes distribution heading in there. And yeah, that's the big story on the Celtics side of things. For the Cleveland side of things, they're dealing with a slew of injuries themselves. Andre Drummond missed his second straight game and 4th out of his last 5 with a calf injury that I suppose he re-aggravated after going for that big 27 and 13 rebound game. His status moving forward is unclear. Tristan Thompson missed his 3rd straight game with his knee issue. And Kevin Porter Jr., who's really come on lately, had to leave this game after only 10 minutes with what appears to be a concussion. At the very least, it was an injury to his head. He was unable to return to the game. And if he, you know, has a concussion, he could be sidelined for a week or two. Another big blow for teams who are ramping up to the playoffs and looking to utilize this really hot run he's been on. Darius Garland, by the way, also missed his 2nd straight game with a groin injury. So, yeah, both teams down with bodies here. Boston, I don't think I mentioned at the top, Boston won this one 112-106. So there you go with that. We'll start with Colin Sexton, who went off for a career-high 41 points in 45 minutes, shot 17 of 30 from the floor, had 3 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal, 4 turnovers, and 3 three-pointers. A really just solid game for a guy who, while he gets a lot of knocks against his game for the lack of anything else, you can't deny that he has sort of taken a step up in his 2nd year. So encouraging stuff for Cleveland in that respect. Kevin Love in 37 minutes also added a pretty full line, 26 points, 14 rebounds, 5 assists, a block, and 5 threes on 9 of 17 shooting. Larry Nance Jr. continues to blow past everyone's expectations post-trade deadline. 19 points per 15 rebounds, 4 assists, 4 steals, and 2 three-pointers on 7 of 13 shooting in 39 minutes. A fantastic line out of Nance, one of the best on the night. Jetty Osman in 43 minutes was forgettable. 13 points on 14 shots, only shot 3 of 14. 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. He shouldn't be owned anywhere. I don't even know what his ownership numbers are, but they're not. It should be zero. He's not a helpful fantasy guy. And Matthew Dellavedova entered the starting lineup, and he played 35 minutes, missed all 8 of his shots, had 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and you're not going to do anything there in case you were looking for some sort of pickup without Kevin Porter Jr. Cavs basically ran with a 7-man lineup, which tells you all you need to know about the state of their team at the moment. And yeah, Cavs are really, you know, Kevin Porter Jr. was sort of the most interesting player. Well, really, okay, no. Larry Nance Jr. is the most interesting player on this team post-trade deadline. He has been a top 40 option. In 29 minutes a game, he's averaging 12 points, 7.8 rebounds, 2.9 assists, a steal and a half, and surprisingly low blocks on 0.3 blocks, but it doesn't matter. He's carrying your team right now with terrific rebounding and steals numbers on decent percentages. And he's just going to keep going big. We were all afraid, and I think rightfully so, that he wasn't going to have the role that he had pre-trade deadline because of Drummond and Love and Thompson all being in the way. But at this point, I don't even think you have to worry about all 4 of those dudes being healthy at the same time. Just doesn't look likely. And even so, he's finding some minutes at the wings here and there, which can help him bump himself up to even more usable value. So yeah, fantastic guy to hold on to. Congrats to you. If you ignored a lot of the advice that was out there about dropping Nance, you were smart to hold him. And as far as Kevin Porter Jr. goes, yeah, he's been playing pretty well. He was close to a top 100 guy since the trade deadline, or really since Bickerstaff took over. And that will continue once he's back, but if you're in the playoffs right now, obviously he's a drop, because you're not going to be able to use him for the rest of the week, and you can't afford to sit on a guy who's really just nothing more than a top 90-ish player when he's hot, when he's playing well like he is right now. So, yeah. All right. Moving on. We have the Oklahoma City Thunder visiting the Detroit Pistons, the point guardless Detroit Pistons. We'll start with the Thunder side of things. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander with a fantastic line tonight. 27 points on an efficient 12 of 15 shooting, 2 3-pointers, 2 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, and just 1 turnover. One of the best 9-cat lines on the night, all in 35 minutes. Chris Paul, in 34 minutes, shot 7 of 10 from the floor, scored 16 points to go with 4 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, and had 6 turnovers as well. Steven Adams, in 32 minutes, scored 8 points to go with 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, and a block shot. And Danilo Gallinari, in his 33 minutes, scored 19 points to go with 7 boards and assists, 4 steals, and 3 3-pointers. By the way, I should have mentioned at the top, the Thunder won this one 114 to 107. Which, it seems like this game was well out. The score was a little farther apart, but Detroit made some garbage time run here. Whatever. And Dennis Schroeder off the bench, 23 points, 7 of 14 shooting to go with 2 threes, 9 assists, and a rebound. And Nerlens Noel in 16 minutes had 8 points, 4 defensive stats, 3 blocks, and a steal, 3 rebounds on 4 of 5 shooting. Nothing really to add on the Thunder front. They're healthy. They're consistent. You really only care about their. There's really only those six guys I mentioned are the only ones that are worth monitoring, with all of them pretty safe standard league players nowadays, aside from Nerlens Noel, who's really just a defensive stat specialist. Detroit. They are without Derrick Rose, who's going to be missing weeks with his sprained right ankle, and Bruce Brown missed his third, I want to say, game in a row with a knee contusion. But there was comments from Dwayne Casey from a practice earlier this week saying that he was hopeful that he'd be able to play on the weekend back-to-back set. That's important because those two injuries are important because Bruce Brown, when he does return, he's basically going to be playing 35 minutes a night at a minimum, half at point guard, maybe even more so, half at shooting guard. He's going to be, I think he's going to be a fantastic down the stretch fantasy player, and you should find a way to put him on your teams. Anyway, let's move into the box score for tonight's proceedings. Christian Wood continues to be the only player on this team besides Bruce Brown who I have any care for at all in any sort of fantasy scenario. 29 points, 12 of 16 shooting, 5 3-pointers, 9 rebounds, 3 assists, and a block shot. Also had 6 turnovers, but who cares? He also hit 5 3-pointers. Did I mention that? I'm going to say that again. 5 threes. He's doing fantastic. Fantastic stuff nowadays. Since the trade deadline, he is number 32 in 9-category leagues. That's 10 games, 21 points per game, 10 rebounds per game, over a block and close to 2 threes on really good percentages. He's everything that we thought he would be. And he's literally the only Piston who's producing fantasy value right now. Literally the only one. The next closest since the trade deadline is Tony Snell, who's number 133 in 9-category leagues. Tony Snell, guys. Speaking of Snell, in 32 minutes, he scored 5 points, 3 rebounds, had 6 assists because I guess someone needs to make some plays on this team, and 2 steals and a block and a 3. Honestly, tonight's line probably boosted him up those 9-cat rankings more than anything. Brandon Knight was the guy who got the start at point guard, and he played fair. It was a fair game for him. In 38 minutes, he scored 18 points to go with 2 rebounds, had 7 assists and 2 steals and 4 3-pointers. He's going to continue to start. He's going to have no choice but to start and play heavy minutes until Bruce Brown returns. Elsewhere in the starting lineups, V. Mykhailiuk had 13 points on 5 of 14 shooting, 3 3-pointers, 4 assists, a steal, and a rebound. And John Henson, who continues to start but play very low minutes in 20 tonight, he had 10 points, 5 rebounds and assists and a steal, no block shots. The other interesting note on this team was Jordan McRae, who surprisingly, all the reports were that Phoenix were going to make the play for him after he had cleared waivers, or I guess they were going to make a waiver play for him, but Detroit had priority and they scooped him. Which makes a lot of sense considering that they don't have any guards who can handle the ball anymore. They're completely devoid of that. So Jordan McRae is now a Detroit Piston. And right out the gate, hours after being signed, he got in there for 26 minutes and scored 15 points on 5 of 11 shooting to go with 2 3-pointers, 2 rebounds, 3 assists, and nothing else really of note. So, yeah, I spent at the top, I talked about Bruce Brown being my top target, and he still is. I think that he is going to play a ton of minutes. And he's going to be great source of assists and rebounds and steals for you down your stretch. But Jordan McRae does make things a little interesting here because, look, this was his first game and he's seen 26 minutes right out the chute. I think that could easily bump up to 30. Easily. He doesn't know anything about this team. He doesn't know anything about the play sets. He just got thrown in there because, hey, Jordan, we don't have any point guards right now. We barely have any shooting guards. Just go out there and score. And he did that. And he will do that going forward. I don't know if it's necessarily fair to compare the production that he had in Washington when he was sort of the big man scoring there. Not the big man. He's a very small man relative to NBA standards. But you know what I mean. He was the big man on campus. Without Bradley Beal, he was the go-to guy. Detroit's offense is not nearly as fantasy-friendly as Washington's was. And even then, McRae's game is points and threes-centric. He can get you some assists here and there. And in particular, on this team, with their lack of point guard available players, now that Rose is gone, he might get himself into the playmaking side of things once he's more familiar. But he's more than likely just going to be a top 120 to maybe top 100 type of player. He's fairly fringy. I'm not going to break the bank to go at him in any spots unless I'm really hurting in points and threes. So just keep him in mind. He's going to play. Again, he's just going to play a ton moving forward if tonight's any indication. Next game on the docket is Pacers and Bucks. Nationally televised game in this one. The Bucks win this one 119-100. We'll start with Indiana, who lost Malcolm Brogdon 11 minutes into this game with a hip injury. I read a blurb. This is rough. This is Brogdon's seventh different injury that he has suffered this season. That's bad. You know, we talk about how he looked so good to start the year, and he did. I mean, he looked amazing. One of the best. He was looking like one of the steals of the fantasy draft. But he's really fallen off the map. His shot has completely fallen off. He's just not able to compile the stats at the volume that he was before. And I gotta say, if you've suffered seven injuries over the course of like what, 4 or 5 months, I'd imagine it'd be tough to maintain any type of consistency. So really tough break for Brogdon. Unclear what his status will be moving forward, but it's obviously worth keeping an eye on. The guy who got the playing time in his absence was TJ McConnell, who, I guess we're starting here, in 30 minutes off the bench, scored 14 points with 4 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals on 7 of 13 shooting. If we find out that Brogdon is sidelined for a while, I think that he becomes an intriguing deep league point guard stream. McConnell has always proven himself to be a rather fantasy-friendly player when he's given the minutes. Aaron Holiday would figure to become pretty interesting as well, but he had to play a little more shooting guard tonight because Victor Oladipo missed this game with a knee injury, which I think I read also that Oladipo was in pregame warmups for this one, so he seems a little closer to coming back. We'll just have to wait and see on that one. But Aaron Holiday also makes sense as a guy who you probably dropped because he's been a little underwhelming as the starting shooting guard. He becomes a lot more interesting probably as the starting point guard here. Tonight, he, in 25 minutes, only scored 5 points to go with 5 rebounds and assist 2 steals. Put him on your watch list. See what he does in his next game if Brogdon's not playing. Elsewhere, Domantas Sabonis, in 37 minutes, ran into the rim-defending gauntlet that is Milwaukee. He only scored 15 points on 6 of 16 shooting, 10 rebounds and 7 assists and 6 turnovers, and a 3-pointer, no defensive stats. Rough outing for him, but he'll bounce back. TJ Warren, similarly, in 33 minutes, scored 18 points on 8 of 18 shooting, 4 rebounds, had an assist with no defensive stats, and no turnovers as well. And Miles Turner in the starting lineup also had 7 points, 5 rebounds, and 2 blocks with 1-3. He is basically just a block specialist nowadays. That's really all there is to that. The other interesting guy that I'm keeping an eye on is Justin Holiday, whose minutes have not really been where I would have expected them to have been since Jeremy Lamb went down. He played 19 tonight, still managed to get you four steals, which frankly, that's why you have him on your team. That the three pointers, he didn't have any of those. 4 points, three rebounds, and the four steals. Those steals floated his line tonight and make him useful for you if you still have him. And he just, you know, I think that's really just where he's capped at. I still think that he has potential. If he can see 23 to 25 minutes a night to be a standard league-ish type of player, but it looks like we're not really going to see a whole ton of consistency from out of him moving forward. Moved on to Milwaukee now, who's a really easy team to go through these days. You know the drill. The starters beat the hell out of whoever it is that they're playing, and they usually don't see over 30 minutes a game, and that is exactly what happened here. No starter for Milwaukee played more than 29 minutes, which was Chris Middleton. Led the team in minutes tonight. 20 points, 8 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 three-pointers on 9 of 16 shooting. Giannis Antetokounmpo scored 29 points to go with 12 boards, 6 assists, and a steal with 2 threes. Brook Lopez in 25 minutes didn't do much, but he had some defensive stats and threes. He had 3 points, 5 rebounds, an assist, 2 steals, a block, and 1 three-pointer. Wes Matthews scored 15 on 6 of 10 shooting to go with 4 rebounds and not much else. And then Eric Bledsoe had a nice game after 3 pretty lackluster performances. 27 minutes, he scored 16 points to go with 5 boards and 7 assists and a 3-pointer. 27 minutes was a little higher than what he's seen in his last 3 that I mentioned. I think he saw 22 minutes in all 3 of those. And perhaps part of the reason you could tie that to is that George Hill was out for this game with a groin injury. He was probable to start the day, but was quickly downgraded to doubtful and then out. So unclear what happened there. Keep your eye on that moving forward. With him gone, Bledsoe might be able to get to closer to 25 minutes as his floor, and that's pretty good. The biggest knock on Bledsoe is that Milwaukee is just too good in that he doesn't play enough to always get you the value that you hope that he would get you. The big news, I guess the big fantasy story from tonight's game was Dante DiVincenzo, who in 23 minutes, the Big Ragu, underrated nickname. I need to start using it more. The Big Ragu in 23 minutes scored 19 points on 5 of 10 shots, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, and a block with 3 three-pointers and 2 turnovers. He's a very potent steal streamer. I've talked him up a good amount on this podcast as being a very underrated standard league type of player. If he's floating around your wire, which is a good chance he is, once you get into your playoffs, keep him in mind for those weeks where Milwaukee plays 4 games or something like that. Anyway, let's move right along here. We have the Magic and the Heat, the Sun Belt battle. Miami winning this game 116 to 113. We'll start with the Orlando side of things. They're a pretty easy team to handicap nowadays. Nikola Vucevic is second-round player. He did a lot of that second-round stuff tonight. 22 points, 16 rebounds, 7 assists and a block in 40 minutes. Markel Fultz was okay in 31 minutes. He scored 14 points on 6 of 10 shots, 2 rebounds and 6 assists with no defensive stats. Aaron Gordon continues to get himself involved in the playmaking side of things, which is really what's revitalized his fantasy value of late. 11 points, 6 rebounds, 9 assists, and 2 steals on 5 of 10 shots. Evan Fournier continues to be a very potent and efficient scorer, 17 points on 6 of 9 shots with 1 assist, 2 steals and 2 blocks, and 3 three-pointers. That's 7 cash counters, I can add. 7 cash counters is a nice line from him tonight with little else going on besides the scoring in those numbers as well. And then Terrence Ross is on he's on fire right now. 35 points in 34 minutes, 12 of 18 shots, 8 for 10 from three-point land. And this is neat. Zero rebounds, 0 assists, 0 steals, and 0 blocks. It was all scoring and threes for Ross tonight. And that's still the type of line that probably gets him added in a whole bunch of leagues. I mean, well, I guess bad example, because Ross is probably already owned in at least half of fantasy leagues because of these scoring outbursts. He's fine, but he's not great. And probably a better points league player. Let's move on to the Miami side of things. We'll start with the starting lineup, as we tend to. Duncan Robinson led the scoring charge here, had one of his crazy three-point shootouts, 27 points, 9 of 12 from the field. Of course, you know how it goes with Duncan Robinson. All 12 of those shots were threes, so 9 three-pointers, 2 rebounds, and a steal. He is the best three-point streamer in fantasy hoops. That's that. Jimmy Butler in 34 minutes. He scored 12 points to go with 7 rebounds, had 8 assists and 2 steals on 4 of 9 shooting from the floor. Bam Adebayo was relatively quiet compared to his standards. 10 points on 5 of 9 shooting, 7 rebounds and 4 assists in 1 block shot. Kendrick Nunn was also fairly quiet in 23 minutes, scored 9 points to go with a rebound, 2 assists and a steal. And in the starting lineup, Derek Jones Jr. played 21 minutes and scored 9 points, to got himself a steal in the block, which is what you're hoping for out of him, as well as 2 rebounds and 2 assists. The bench, though, there's a few interesting notes on the Miami bench. We'll start with Jae Crowder, who continues to see gigantic minute loads, 32 minutes, only shot 1 of 8 from the floor. His field goal percentage has really plummeted back down to earth. 7 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and a block, though, and 1 three-pointer. That's still somewhat useful. Taking a look at his numbers since the trade deadline, Jae Crowder is, in those 11 games that he's been with Miami, he's been a top 40 option, number 36 in 9 category leagues. Those numbers are floated by his that average is floated by 3 three-pointers a game and a steal and a half. His field goal percentage at a certain point was like over 500. Now it's back down to 45%. And I would imagine the further we get into this Miami Heat tenure, he is going to probably get himself closer to the 40-ish percent mark. Because, you know, don't forget, he was really, really bad from the field in Memphis earlier this season. I think he was shooting about 36%, maybe 39%, somewhere between those numbers. So if you're a team who really, you know, he's going to hurt you there. It's definitely coming. But it does look like that the threes and steals between those two things, he will continue to maintain some fantasy value. It's kind of impressive. He's maintained a relatively safe minutes floor in Miami, a team that's very notorious for yanking guys' minutes around. So, yeah, that it is what it is on that. There's obviously no ad to make because Jae Crowder's pretty much owned everywhere, as he should be for this really solid production here. Kelly Olynyk went 5 of 5 off the bench, 16 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists in 3 three-pointers. He's really playing well. He's just not getting enough minutes to be trustworthy in fantasy settings. Like, there's no player in fantasy that you can trust in 15 minutes a night, which is basically what he's averaging, regardless if he starts, comes off the bench, what have you. He's a guy I'm definitely keeping tabs on for whenever he gets to go to another team. He could be a monstrous player next season. And then Goran Dragic scored 25 points on 8 of 15 shots, 9 assists, 2 rebounds, and a steal. Great game for Dragic, but really, on the whole, he's outside a standard league usefulness despite the high minutes totals that he usually sees on a night-to-night basis. So we'll move along here. You know what? This is about the point where my podcast, my last recording cut out. And, you know, it's my podcast right now. I'm overseeing things, and I'm going to skip around. I want to go to talk about this game because it's the most interesting game on the night, in my opinion, from a fantasy perspective. And that's the Chicago Bulls and the Minnesota Timberwolves. Minnesota won this one 115 to 108. Chicago, we'll start there. They got back. Lauri Markkanen made his return today after missing close to a month with a pelvic injury. And last night's game, they got Otto Porter Jr. back. Oh, I guess it wasn't last night. It was 2 nights ago. Otto Porter Jr. came back after missing 3 months with a foot injury. Now, all of a sudden, Chicago has all of their guys back, except for their biggest piece, Zach LaVine, who was sitting out tonight's game with a quad injury. And I believe at a practice earlier this week said that he expects to miss a week. So, of course, Chicago, I saw some crazy stat that since Chicago acquired Otto Porter at the trade deadline last season, Chicago's true, in quotation marks, starting lineup of Levine, Markkanen, Wendell Carter, Otto Porter, and some point guard, I guess it was Chris Dunn. Maybe at least those four guys of Chicago's core, they've only played like 20 games together in a season and a half. It's crazy stuff. So, yeah, a lot of stuff to keep our eyes on in Chicago now that these guys are back in the fold. Lauri Markkanen, in tonight's return, he got back into the starting lineup over Thad Young. He played 21 minutes and scored 13 points on with 4 rebounds, 6 of 10 shooting, and 1 3. Thad Young, off the bench, still saw 29 minutes, had 13 points with 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks, and 1 3-pointer. And this is basically Thad Young's last hurrah. He's been really, really good over his last couple of weeks. He was kind of iffy when he moved into the starting lineup initially when Markkanen went down, but he really settled into a groove, and it's pretty much over now. Once Markkanen gets himself back up to his usual allotment of minutes, I have very little to almost no faith that Thaddeus Young can maintain fantasy value. He wasn't good before when he was just seeing 20 minutes a night. And I could very easily see the minutes distribution between he and Markkanen, the ones that we saw tonight, flip once Markkanen's ready to take on the extra minutes load. So if you have Thaddeus Young and he, you know, it's probably going to be tough to let him go, but be prepared because he's about to start putting up clunkers and unhelpful fantasy lines. He needs the minutes. You can ride him for one more game because Markkanen's not going to get to that minutes threshold immediately. But I don't think you can expect what we saw out of him tonight. It's also worth remembering that that Minnesota's got a very, very not good front line right now. So it's probably easy for a guy like Thaddeus Young to get himself scoring and collecting those defensive stats, all the stuff that he does really well. Minnesota's a relative cakewalk compared to a lot of other front lines out there. While we talk about the small forward battle here, Otto Porter Jr. off the bench only saw 18 minutes despite Chicago saying that they were raising his minutes limit to 20 to 22. He just didn't play all that well tonight. He shot 1 of 8 from the floor, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and a block shot. He's interesting. After the 18-point outburst in his first game back, I think that there was a lot of excitement, and I think rightfully so. He looked really good in that game. And it was reasonable to assume that you missed 3 months with this foot injury. Perhaps it explains why you looked so out of sorts to start the year. I mean, right from the get-go, when you watched Otto Porter play to start the season, he looked like he was playing hurt. And it wasn't until about a month into the year that we finally got word that he's got this foot. I don't even remember it's been so long, I don't even remember exactly what the foot issue was. But it was enough to keep him out of the lineup basically indefinitely until a week ago. So you have a really good performance weighed with this really bad performance tonight. Where do we expect him to be moving forward? I think he's still worth holding. I'm gonna steal a talking point that I heard on today's edition of Fantasy NBA Today with Dan and Brandon talking about these guys. I think that they both concluded on a very solid point here that Porter has upside. True, we've seen it well documented upside that he's worth holding on to through the bad games to see if he can ramp himself up to basically somewhere in that ballpark of fantasy value that we've seen him do before. However, it should be situationally based. I'm talking all over myself tonight, guys. It should be situationally based. if you're in a play, if you're secured in your playoff position and it doesn't start for another 2 weeks, which I know a majority of playoffs in Yahoo leagues are, that's the standard. I think it's March 16th. If you're locked into a playoff spot, Otto Porter is absolutely worth holding on to. He has that level of upside, and there's enough logic here to assume that there's a chance that he could get himself up to a usable spot. If you're fighting for the playoffs, conversely, you probably don't have the luxury to hold on to him. As tough as it may be, if you want, it's just he's going to be. I think tonight showed us that it can get real ugly for him real quick. He's going to take a lot of shots, it looks like. It doesn't seem like Chicago is steering him away from that. But this guy's got to get his legs underneath him. And he's just going to be drilling holes into your team if he's just taking high volume looks like this and not doing anything with them. So I think that's, I think that's just the correct way to approach the situation. If you're in a roto league, which doesn't even matter with playoffs, it's still sort of the same situation. If you're doing really well right now, say you're ahead in your games cap, he's a solid guy to hold on to. But, if you're down in the standings and you need to make runs and you need to find usable streaming options, he's probably not a guy that's worth holding on to. There's very few injured guys that are worth holding on to at this stage in a roto setting. Perhaps maybe a guy like Bruce Brown is someone who's acceptable, considering that there are reports that he will be back for the weekend, and he's got a ton of usage and minutes waiting for him once that happens. I think that's a fine hold. Dwayne Dedman, who is going to be coming back to the Hawks lineup on Friday and figures to be their starting center, in my mind, the rest of the way, I don't think we're seeing Clint Capela. And if we are, it's not going to be at a point where the fantasy landscape matters all that much. I think he's a guy who's currently injured that's worth holding on to, well, because he's going to be playing in this next game. Otto Porter is a commitment. He's an investment, and it's going to be too much to withstand. So assess your situation and go from there. As for Lauri Markkanen, he's in a similar boat, but I think he'll have an easier time of ramping up because he's already in the starting lineup. I don't think that he hasn't dealt with nearly the magnitude of issues that Porter has this year. Granted, his upside isn't as high as Porter's could be, but he does have usable top 80-ish upside as this stretch four. And I don't think it'll be long before he's playing his 29 minutes again. So that one, I feel okay, no matter your setting, unless you're in the playoffs right now, I have no problem sitting on Lauri as we continue to watch him ramp up. Anyway, let's talk about the rest of the Bulls here before we move on to the Timberwolves. The leading scorer for Chicago was Coby White. White hot Coby White. 26 points on 11 of 22 shots, 2 3-pointers, 6 assists and a rebound. And I'm going to eat crow on this one, guys, because I've definitely been playing him down. I was like, this is just a clear hot streak here that is just going to fall off, and it's going to fall off in a big way. Coby White has been going nuts over his last 10 games. I have him right here. Over his last 10, in 31 minutes a night, he's scoring 21 points per game with 3 3-pointers. 4 rebounds and 4 assists and a steal, 44% from the field and 93% from the line. That's good enough to give him top 50 rankings in 9-category leagues. He's been fantastic. He looks like he's certainly turning a corner in his rookie season, as we often do with rookie guards, mind you. Saw that with Trae Young last year. Saw that with Luka Doncic last year to a degree as well, who was a rookie guard. I still find White's game to be a little empty outside the scoring stuff, although that 10-game averages I just read out seems pretty full to me. 4 rebounds and 4 assists. Yeah, if you have him, congratulations. Thank you. Good job not listening to me. You were totally right to do so. And just keep riding him until the wheels fall off. especially with Zach LaVine now, he's going to slot in very nicely into a lot of those offensive sets that they have for LaVine. Elsewhere in the starting lineup, Shaq Harrison starting at small forward, and he scored 19 points to go with 2 rebounds, 2 assists, and 3 steals, and 3 three-pointers. And Tomas Satoransky, he's been fine, 10 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, and a steal, 5 of 11 shooting. He's really kind of, well, I say he's fine, but he's really honestly turned himself into an assist specialist lately. Helps you out with some steals too, but he's rather fringy. He's probably a safe guy to consider dropping unless you're in need of assists. Let's move on to the Timberwolves side of things, who aren't quite as interesting as Chicago, but are rather interesting. Malik Beasley led the scoring charge, 24 points on 8 of 14 shooting. He also contributed 3 rebounds and 2 assists and 4 three-pointers. D'Angelo Russell in 31 minutes. He scored 19 points to go with 3 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal with 4 threes. Those two continue to hold down the fort without Karl Anthony Towns, both top 50 guys. Russell, top 30, since Towns went down with the injury. So keep riding those two. The big interesting stuff, though, comes with the front court here. Naz Reid has really picked it up over his last two ball games. I think he compiled 5 defensive stats in his last game. And in tonight's game, he kept his foot on the gas. He had 16 points with 11 rebounds on 5 of 10 shooting, 3 assists and 2 block shots and 3 three-pointers, all in 25 minutes. Only had 2 fouls. He's figuring it out on the fly. You know, when he first slotted into the starting lineup, he put up a lot of clunkers, mostly because he couldn't stay on the floor long enough. He kept fouling himself out. And then he got past the foul issues, but the fantasy stuff wasn't quite there, probably because a lot of his game was focused on learning how to play defense without fouling, which is tough to do for a lot of these big guys. You know, you see highly acclaimed players like Jaren Jackson Jr., Mitchell Robinson, and Wendell Carter, who have all struggled with the defensive, the fouling issue. So it's a credit to Naz Reid that he's been a lot better at that over his last 5 or so games here. And yeah, I mean, he's really come on in a big way. He's now brought himself up to a top 90 value without Towns, a lot of which is credited to his last 3 games. And I think he's a solid hold and should be used everywhere until Towns is back. Another guy who should continue to be held on to is James Johnson, who's really, really impressive right now, guys. He had the rough outing with the 2 points and the 4 rebounds and nothing else, I think, 2 games ago. But he is a defensive stat magnet in his current role. 22 minutes off the bench, 8 points, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks, and a 3-pointer. That's tasty, tasty stuff, guys. I mean, my goodness. He had he's a top 70 guy without Towns in 9 games played. He's averaging a steal and a half and 1.8 blocks per game in that span. He's just he's a perfect guy to have if you're in need of defensive stats. And it's not all he does too. He's a good playmaker. He's always been a good playmaker, but he's really doing well at that right now as well. He's averaging 5 rebounds and 3.5 assists in that 9-game span as well. Very usable guy. Should be held on to everywhere. And perhaps even beyond once Towns is back. Who knows? All right, that's enough time on this game. I could tell you what Juan Hernan Gomez did. 12 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists and a steal, and 2 threes in 31 minutes. Good stuff, but you know, not earth-shattering. That's my full take on him as a fantasy asset as well. Grizzlies and Nets. We'll move on there. And good God, the Nets are—they're in such dire straits these days. Memphis wins this one, 118-79. Imagine scoring 79 points in today's NBA. Memphis, for the record, they have held their last 3 opponents to below 90 points last 3 games. That's impressive. Give them credit where credit's due. Of course, it came against some iffy opponents. Although the Hawks I was at that Hawks-Memphis game and felt like I wasted my money because the Hawks played like garbage the whole time. They're a good offense, though. So give credit to Memphis's defense. They're really starting to piece things together without a lot of their core guys. That has not really translated, though, to fantasy value for this team, because since Jaren Jackson Jr.'s and Brandon Clark's injuries, Jonas Valanciunas has been like the only fantasy-relevant guy, with a slight shout-out to Gorgui Dieng. Everyone else on this team, though, they're really struggling from a fantasy perspective. We'll start with JV, who didn't do much in the scoring department, 9 points and 4 of 9 shooting, but he did add 16 rebounds, 2 assists, and a block shot to the line, so pretty good stuff out of him. John Morant, who is close to fantasy relevant during the stretch without the 2 fours, but he's really, you know, there's something still missing there. He has scored 15 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists on 6 of 15 shooting tonight with a steal. The defensive stats have not been there as much as one might think. His field goal percentage has been nice, though, which is, I think, been the case all year with him. You just kind of hope that he adds a little more defense to the lines to really kind of help float his value. De'Anthony Melton, who some more crow I probably need to eat, but not for the reasons that, not as fun as the Coby White reasons. Melton has not been fantasy useful at all since Memphis's trade deadline. He scored 9 points in this game on 3 of 9 shots. All were 3-pointers. He had 3 rebounds and 3 assists and a block shot, which is okay. But as a whole, he's been outside the top 220 in 9-category leagues. He's just, the defensive stats aren't there. The minutes aren't exactly as high as we would have thought they would be either. And yeah, I don't think that he deserves roster. He doesn't warrant roster ownership in any setting. Kyle Anderson was another guy that I was keeping close tabs on as sort of a punt points, punt threes type of player. Tonight, he, in 22 minutes, he scored 12 points on 5 of 9 shots with 5 rebounds and nothing else. He, since sort of, I guess, goes against what one might have expected, since JJJ and Brandon Clark went out, Kyle Anderson, who is basically one of the true fours left on the roster, he's been outside the top 170 in that 6-game span. So another L on my part. He's probably not going to be worthwhile at all, aside from some streaming stretches here and there for teams looking for some defensive stuff and some assists and rebounds. Off the bench, Gorgui Dieng, in 19 minutes, had 14 rebounds on 2 of 4 shots, 2 block shots, and 6 points. He's a fine streamer until one of those 2 forwards come back for Memphis. Josh Jackson, having a nice 2-game run here, he scored 19 points on 6 of 12 shots, 4 3-pointers, an assist, and 2 steals. I'm not doing anything there. And I'm all right. I'm perfectly fine with being wrong on that one, but Josh Jackson has proven pretty significantly that he's not a fantasy guy over the years. Tyus Jones also played pretty well off the bench with 18 points, 5 rebounds, and 6 assists. Let's move over, though, to the Brooklyn side of things, which is so gross. Granted, this is the second night of a back-to-back for them, an overtime game at that. Caris LeVert with the 50-point masterpiece that he put on yesterday. Not quite as good in tonight's game, which I guess is to be expected. 14 points on 6 of 19 shots, 4 rebounds, 6 assists, and a steal. He's actually the only Brooklyn Net, though, that's worth anything since Kyrie Irving went down with his injury. He's still a top 40 guy since that happened. But no one else on this team has even gotten close to fantasy value. Not even close. Other lines from tonight, Taurean Prince, 15 points on 6 of 19 shots, 5 rebounds, no defensive stats, no assist, 2 threes. He's been terrible without Kyrie Irving. Outside the top 270 in 13 games, his field goal percent has fallen off a cliff. He's shooting 37% on 11 shots. I've gone over this point to death. I don't need to do the research anymore. He's not a fantasy guy when Kyrie Irving's not playing. Simple as that. A lot of these guys aren't, frankly. The weird center battle here continues to frustrate me. Jarrett Allen, even though he won the minutes battle tonight. He played 29, 3 of 5 shooting, 9 rebounds, 6 shots, no defensive stats, 3 turnovers. Missed both of his free throws. Pretty rough line out of him. Spencer Dinwiddie in 27 minutes, shot 1 of 9 from the floor, 4 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and a block. He's been outside the top 160 in those 13 games without Kyrie Irving. Seems like a fair place to peg him. That's with 17 points per game, a 3.5, 4 rebounds, and 7.7 assists per game. All really good stuff. But he's shooting 37% from the field, and he's averaging a combined 0.8 defensive stats. It's the Reggie Jackson effect, I like to call it. He and Reggie Jackson are actually very similar fantasy players when given the minutes, which I don't think a lot of people would consider those two on the same level in real life. And I don't think you should. But in fantasy, they're one and the same. Two peas in a pod. Two peas in a very inefficient shooting pod. Anyway, that's really all I care to talk about here. DeAndre Jordan only played 14 minutes. Just keep your eye on that minutes battle between he and Jarrett Allen. Anyhow. Oh, actually, you know what? I'll give Joe Harris credit here for putting together a pretty decent line tonight. 13 points on 5 of 13 shooting, 3 three-pointers, 8 rebounds and assist, 2 steals and a block. It's a pretty uncharacteristic line from Joe Harris. He's not a defensive stat guy, but you'll take it when it happens. Utah and New York. The Jazz visiting the Garden here. They won this game 112 to 104. We're keeping our eye on Utah since they had that weird sort of bungled public announcement of changing their lineup last week. In the 4 games since that happened, Mike Conley has been number 85 in 9 category leagues, which is, yeah, that's good. He's looking better to his credit since coming back. He scored 17 points in this game, 6 of 9 shooting, 6 assists and 2 rebounds and 2 three-pointers. I know that he is not the same guy as he was last year, but he does look like he's worth holding on to in most settings while he's playing like this. Rudy Gobert led the charge for Utah, 18 points, 14 rebounds, an assist, and 2 block shots, and 7 of 8 shooting. Donovan Mitchell handled a lot of the scoring load with 23 points on an ugly 21 shots, 1-3, 8 assists, 2 steals. Bojan Bogdanović, 23 points, 4 rebounds, an assist, and a block shot on 7 of 15 shots. And Royce O'Neal only made 1 of his 8 shots en route to 3 points, 4 rebounds, and 3 assists with 1 three-pointer. The other guy that we're keeping an eye on is Joe Harris off the bench and Jordan Clarkson. It's really those 2 and 4 of the 5 starters that we're talking about from fantasy. Ingles tonight played pretty well, 8 points on 3 of 4 shots, 30 minutes, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, and a steal with 3 turnovers. Since the lineup change, he's been better than he has been recently, but he's still not fantasy useful. Top 180 in 9 category leagues. And that's with the field goal percent coming back. But yeah, he's an afterthought at this point moving forward. Jordan Clarkson starting to cool off as well after a really nice stretch of scoring performances out of him. But he's the type of guy, when the scoring's not there, the rest of the fantasy stuff isn't as well. 7 points, 1 assist, 2 steals, and 1 three-pointer. To the Knicks side of things, no Mitchell Robinson tonight, out with a hamstring issue, which is really unfortunate because he was starting to put together his best ball of the season. And now I'm relegated to not caring at all about anything that happens with this Knicks team. We'll start with Julius Randle, 32 points on 12 of 21 shots, 11 rebounds, and not much else. Elfrid Payton scored 20 on 8 of 13 shots with 7 rebounds, 9 assists, and no defensive stats. A lot of no defensive stat lines tonight. Kind of interesting. Bobby Portis absorbed a lot of Robinson's minutes, 30 minutes off the bench with 8 of 15 shots, 21 points, 4 rebounds, and a steal. RJ Barrett on 5 of 12 shots scored 14 points to go with 4 rebounds, 5 assists, and a steal. Taj Gibson in 14 minutes didn't do anything, 2 points and a rebound. Mo Harkless in the starting lineup didn't do anything, 21 minutes with 2 points, 2 rebounds, and a steal. And that's it. I have nothing else to add for this team, this game, all of it. Let's move on to probably the most entertaining game of the night. Actually, not probably, by a large margin. The Dallas Mavericks and the New Orleans Pelicans. Luka versus Zion. Must-see TV. Dallas wins this one in overtime, 127 to 123. We'll start with New Orleans with pretty full lines for the starting lineup. Brandon Ingram in 41 minutes scored 27 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and a block shot with 3 three-pointers. Zion Williamson in 35 minutes shot 9 of 18 from the floor to go with 21 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and no defensive stats. Lonzo Ball continues to just play really exceedingly well. 25 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, a block, and 7 three-pointers. That's a guy I'm going to be very interested to see where he goes in drafts next season. I mean, he's been playing at like a top 60 pace for the last 2 months. Jrue Holiday played well, 37 minutes, 19 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, and 3 three-pointers. And Derek Favors, having a sort of a mini resurgence of late. 10 points, 14 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, and a block in 32 minutes. The other guy I'm paying attention to on this team is Josh Hart, hoping that he can sort of get himself into a more consistent 25-minute role. But oddly enough, since J.J. Redick went down, his minutes have decreased. He only saw 13 in tonight's game, 1 of 6 shooting from the floor, 2 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. You know, I brought up a lot that he was going on he had a really nice month in February. He was a top 70 player. 25 minutes a night, usually 10 points, 8 rebounds, close to a steal and a half, close to a 3.5. It's all gone. In a sort of an unintuitive way now that J.J. Redick isn't here. This was a mostly starting 5 performance out of New Orleans. To the Dallas side of things, Luka Doncic did Luka Doncic things, another triple-double for him, which I believe, unless I've missed a triple-double in between, I believe since last week, I believe that this now gives him the Dallas Mavericks franchise record for triple-doubles. 30 points, 17 rebounds, 10 assists, a steal, and a block, and 7 turnovers on 9 of 20 shooting with 4 threes. The efficiency stuff has really come back in a big way for him, unfortunately. He missed 11 shots, and he missed 5 free throws. The 5 free throws is really going to kill you, as will the turnovers. But you can't deny the sexiness of a 30-point, 17-rebound triple-double. That's all anyone's going to talk about. Kristaps Porzingis also is playing really, really well of late. 34 points on 14 of 28 shots, 3 three-pointers, 12 rebounds, 3 assists, and 5 block shots. Fantastic stuff out of him. Dorian Finney-Smith, I believe, left this game with a hip issue, so he only saw 9 minutes, which opened the door for more playing time for Seth Curry and DeLon Wright. Curry off the bench is continuing to maintain some decent scoring, 21 points on 7 of 12 shots, 6 threes, 3 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal, whereas Wright in 25 minutes scored 10 points to go with 3 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, and 3 three-pointers. Pretty hesitant to recommend adding any Dallas Maverick, but I will say that these two are worth looks for different reasons. Curry, because, I mean, the scoring's just, he's playing the best basketball of his career, and they're definitely going to use a lot more of him if Finney-Smith is out for an extended period of time. And same for DeLon Wright, he'll be able to slot in at minutes at the 2 and maybe a little bit at the 3 in small ball lineups. If he can get himself to 25 minutes, there might be some value there in defensive stats, but I think he's proven time and time again this year that he's pretty tough to rely on. So I think in mid-sentence, I'm backtracking and just going to say that Seth Curry is really the only guy that I would look to add, whereas DeLon I've got an eye on. And with that, we're going to move on to our last game on the night. The Washington Wizards and the Portland Trailblazers. Trailblazers getting back Damian Lillard after a 6-game absence. You know they're happy to see him. But we'll start with the Washington Wizards side of things. Bradley Beal, he's been locked into FU mode ever since he was snubbed from the All-Star team. Tonight's game, he scored 29 points on 29 shots, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, and a steal. He's climbed himself back up to that first-round value, which is nice for teams that were really getting sick of the lack of the rough performances out of him. Since the trade deadline, he's been number 9 in 9-cat leagues. for that, for what that's worth. 35 points per game. My goodness. Elsewhere, Rui Hachimura in the starting lineup. He had 11 points to go with 4 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal. Not my favorite option. Shabazz Napier, he played 26 minutes. He's still the starting point guard. 3-10 shooting from the floor with 1-3, 9 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and a block. This one hurts a little bit more because Ish Smith missed this game with a hamstring issue, which you would have figured opens the door for Napier to play himself into 30 minutes, which did not happen. He's pretty much a drop in most leagues at this point. I don't think that he's worth waiting on to sort of get something together. All the logic's still there that he could be a really nice fantasy play with a fast-paced offense and, you know, the recent history of him doing so. In Minnesota, he had a nice top 60 run over like a 3-week to a month period. But that seems to be gone. Those days are. Mo Wagner moved into the starting lineup over Jan Mahimi and Thomas Bryant. Bryant did not play because of the right foot. Jan Mahimi was a DNP coach's decision. And it's frustrating and encouraging that A, Wagner's in the starting lineup because, you know, he's a permanent stud. At least he has been in Washington. But he only played 19 minutes, had 9 points, 9 rebounds, an assist, 2 steals on 4 of 8 shooting. That's a decent fantasy line, but you feel like it could be a lot better. He's a guy I'm interested in adding, but I don't really see the path for him to actually get to that 25-minute role. I just don't think it's going to happen. Maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe not. But, you know, well, it remains to be seen what happens with Jan Mahimi moving forward, whether or not he's going to be playing more games. And Thomas Bryant, honestly, the dude just needs to be shut down. Washington is, I don't care what anyone says, they're not playing for anything. This dude can't get over a 15-minute limit. He's already re-aggravated a stress reaction in his foot. He's a big man. Just shut him down. We might be getting closer towards that. If he's permanently shut down, that's the time to add Wagner, but not until we get that news. And then Davis Bertans off the bench, 21 points on 8 of 16 shots, 4 threes, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, and a block in 1 turnover. And yeah. Isaac Bonga picked up a lot more, some extra minutes, I guess, without Ish Smith. He played 28 off the bench, 7 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals on 3-5 shooting, but nothing there. And my old friend, Anges Pasiknics. Anges Pasiknics, 16 minutes for the big man off the bench, 2 points, 4 rebounds, and a block. Absolutely nothing to keep tabs on there. I just wanted to try and say the guy's name. And I think I did okay. Final team for tonight, the Portland Trail Blazers, welcoming Damian Lillard back after a 6-game absence. In 32 minutes, he scored 22 points on 6 of 12 shooting, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals and a block. Hassan Whiteside went big. He had 24 points to go with 16 rebounds, 2 assists, 4 blocks on 10 of 14 shooting. Carmelo Anthony scored 25 points on 8 of 13 shots, 5 rebounds and assists, and 2 steals. CJ McCollum played well with 22 points on 9 of 18 shooting, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. And Trevor Ariza played pretty well as well. 15 points on 3 of 5 shooting, 2 threes, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 4 assists. Really solid performance all around by the Portland starting five tonight. It was probably a celebration of having their main guy Lillard back. He played 32 minutes out the shoot, so no concerns with him ramping up at all. He's plug and play, good to go. The whole team will really benefit as a result. And this kills the value of anyone else on this team, particularly Gary Trent Jr., who looks like he has played himself into a nice share of minutes for himself off the bench. He had 28 minutes in this one, but he only scored 2 points on 1 of 7 shots, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, no 3-pointers. You know, if a couple of those threes go in, it might be a better line, but he's not on the radar in pretty much any setting. He does appear to have earned himself a 6-man role, though, which is nice. And that's it. That's your box score breakdown, folks. I am pray to God there's no technical issues associated with this one, because having to record this podcast a third time would be awful. Frankly, it's 1 a.m. my time. I would not be recording a third podcast. This would be it. Yeah, I mentioned earlier at the top, we have some new podcasts here. That's really exciting stuff. I'm really a fan. I've listened to both of them, and they're definitely worth a listen. First one, we'll say the Hoopball Chicago Bulls feed is back up and running. It was a thing that existed before. I think it was a little before my time. Not quite sure what happened with that one, but it's back now. They just had their debut episode go up. Hosted by Greg Mraz. I'm sorry if I pronounced that last name incorrectly, Greg. But I listened to the first show. He sounds like a great host. If you're a Bulls fan, and I talked a lot about them in this podcast, they're very interesting right now. Definitely worth a listen. Keep your tabs on the Hoopball news feed for when that next episode drops. And then, of course, the other show is a general NBA show. It's not fantasy stuff. It's just NBA Today, hosted by Corbin. Listen to that. Listen to a couple of his episodes, and he's really good, guys. Definitely want to take a few pointers from him on how to do a solo pod. He does a variety of different things. He mixes humor with interesting stats. You can tell that he's a huge fan. Definitely recommend both of those new podcasts, is the Chicago Hoopball Bulls podcast and NBA Today. You can look them up on our website, and I'm sure Hoopball Fantasy will be plugging their links a lot moving forward here. Speaking of plugging, you guys should follow me on Twitter at Alan Sroci, AlanSrochi. I try and do daily weekday watch lists. I did not get one out for today, but I generally get them out Mondays through Fridays. It's a lot of fun. Kind of go through what I do here and go over all these fringy guys that are sort of noteworthy, just trends that are worth monitoring. It's a fun way to engage with a lot of listeners and a lot of readers and all of that. So join the fun. You can tell me you hate my voice too or whatever. I don't even care. Come and talk to me. I love reaching out to all you guys on Twitter. And yeah, hopefully next week I'll be accompanied by some other voice talent here. The captain, I believe he'll be making his return. So that'll be a lot of fun. And yeah, we're getting close, guys. It is the ramp up here. I'm not going to waste any more time. Thank you all for tuning in. I will catch you all next week. Have a great rest of your week. Goodbye for now.
This has been a Hoopball presentation.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.